show is becoming harder and harder to do, and I think it's only going to get more difficult as time goes on. So I'm going to have Connor Letourneau of the San Francisco Chronicle join me later on to talk about Tiger King. But last night, NBC Sports replayed Klay Thompson's 37-point quarter from 2015. And we'll get to that. But first, welcome to Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on all things Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Wes Goldberg, Warriors writer for the Mercury News. I said I won't be recapping these games, these replays. And look, I don't want to. But in an article that I wrote for the Mercury News, I spoke with Steve Kerr about that game that aired last night against the Kings in 2015 when Klay Thompson scored 37 points in that third quarter. I want to read you this quote. Kerr said, "It remains the most amazing experience I've had in my 6 years of coaching in terms of the connection between the player and the fans and what was happening on the floor. I'm not kidding. I hope this doesn't sound like hyperbole, but it was like a religious experience." Klay made all 13 of his shots in that quarter, just couldn't miss, was absolutely on fire. Steve went on to call Klay one of the defining players of this era, and I don't really think we talk about Klay enough in that way. Everybody knows about his three-point shooting, his defense, and all of that, but I think what Klay's defining skill is his ability to go on these scoring surges that can change not only games, but seasons. You could argue that his game six against the Thunder 3 years ago, you know, helped spur a dynasty. You know, helped elongate a dynasty, go from, okay, a one-time championship team to a dynasty team. I think when we look back on Klay, we'll see the three-point shooting percentages, we'll see the numbers, we'll see the All-Star games, we'll see all of that, but I think what we'll really remember about him is just his ability to score in bunches in very few minutes with very few dribbles. I don't think we've ever seen anything like that. He is an all-star. He's a superstar player. He is so low maintenance, and not low maintenance in the way of he doesn't ask for much. You know, he's not trying to bring his people on private jets or on the team plane, team bus, or he's not asking for like lavish things in the locker room. That's not what I mean by low maintenance. What I mean by low maintenance is you don't really have to do anything to allow him. You don't have to do anything differently to allow Klay Thompson to perform at his best. All you have to do is get him the ball. I mean, he can exist in any offense, drive and kick, motion offense like Steve Kerr. I mean, he can just function in every offense and function like an all-star caliber player. Because of how low maintenance he is, because he doesn't need the ball to be effective, I don't think that this ACL thing is going to bother him as much as I think a lot of other players have been bothered by ACLs. And 10, 20 years from now, when we're looking back on Klay Thompson and his career, what we're going to remember are those crazy scoring nights where the guy takes two dribbles and scores 40 points, where he can single-handedly just catch fire out of nowhere, just spontaneously combust and change the course of an entire season, of an entire game, within minutes, because there's nothing you can do. Because he's 6'6", and he can shoot from 30 feet out, and there's just nothing you can do to stop him. And you can't attack him on defense to get him off the floor because he's a great defender. And he's not a perfect player by any means, but it is remarkable. I've never seen a player like him, quite like Klay Thompson. I haven't. I challenge anybody to find a player like him. And I think that's what Steve Kerr was kind of getting at. And when he goes on those binges, I might not go as far as Steve Kerr in calling it a religious experience. I'm not that religious in the first place, but it is surreal. Like, I kind of get where Steve is coming from in saying that. It is unlike anything that you've ever seen. It is almost supernatural. I mean, it's remarkable, undoubtedly. And so I think that game that they showed last night over on NBC Sports, and they're going to keep doing these over the course of the next few weeks, and a lot of them are going to involve Klay Thompson in games like that. I mean, I'm sure they're going to play Game 6. I'm sure they're going to play, you know, the Pacers game. I'm sure they're going to do all these things. And, you know, it's easier to appreciate that when Klay Thompson isn't playing. right? When it's gone, it's easier to appreciate what you have when it's gone, right? And so, you know, he will hopefully come back at full strength next year and continue to do these things next to Steph Curry and Draymond Green and now Andrew Wiggins and this group. But watching that game, man, I just, again, I've never seen anything like that before. And him being gone for a season really reinforces that, because you look across the rest of the game, nobody's doing that. Nobody is doing that. Once Clay's gone, nobody's doing that. I mean, you could say, like, guys get hot. Damian Lillard gets hot, but Damian Lillard crosses the floor, he brings the ball up, and he shoots off the dribble. Nobody does it like Clay Thompson does. I mean, yeah, he could be playing for the Warriors. I'm sure it helps, but I feel like he could be doing that for any team in the league. Like, it wouldn't matter where he was playing. And so that's why I say I've never seen anything like that. Connor Letourneau joins me next. This is Locked on Warriors. Let me tell you about one of the ultimate life hacks. We know it's hard to find the time to read, which is key for your development in business and your personal life, but there's an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. You've heard interviews with successful people and leaders, and they all tout just how much they read. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so that you could start using that information right away. It also has an audio feature which helps you listen to these books. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library that includes self-help, business, health, history, books, and tons of bestsellers. Now, this is the part of the ad copy that tells me to share a personal experience. And look, while being sheltered in place here, I've had nothing but time to read. There's a bunch of titles that I've been trying to work through, and Blinkist helps me do that, to get through them efficiently while continuing to produce this podcast, continuing to write stories for the Mercury News. Blinkist helps me get to those titles that I've been meaning to get to. How do you do it? With Blinkist, you get the ultimate access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books that you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA and try it free for 7 days and save 25% off of your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled Blinkist, BLINKIST.com, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. We got Connor on the line here from the San Francisco Chronicle. Connor, thanks for joining me. Second time this week. Appreciate you jumping on, because we were going to talk next week about Tiger King, which is the Netflix documentary miniseries that is everybody's talking about right now. Like, of all the people I talk to, which are very few these days, everybody's talking about Tiger King. And we had to talk about it instead of waiting a whole week. Now, I'm only a few episodes in. Have you finished the whole thing yet?
I finished it last night. I watched it in two nights. I was up till like 4 a.m. two nights ago watching it, and it messed up my whole sleep schedule.
If that's not a great commercial for this thing, I don't know what it is. But let's. So I texted you when I was watching it, and I texted you, is it weird that I'm proud that most of this takes place in South Florida? And you said it. LOL. Yes. I mean, this is. The B-roll scenes, all these things, like, I recognize parts of it. Like, the first scene is in Homestead. Like, I'm all about this stuff. It really reminds me of home.
It's very on brand for Florida. The characters, the personalities, it kind of fulfills a lot of Florida stereotypes. And so I wasn't too surprised when a large majority of the show takes place in Florida.
I mean, among some of the characters, there's this kingpin who's basically the Scarface. You know, he basically says Scarface was based on my life, right? And he seems like maybe the least crazy person. And this is a guy who was, like, had a 100-year prison sentence. He got out in 12 years. It was, like, literally, like, murdering people and talking about how he watched people get murdered, and he was one of the biggest cocaine kingpins in Miami, and he's like the least craziest person within like the first couple episodes that's introduced. Who to you is the craziest person? And let's keep this limited to like the first couple episodes for our listeners.
Yeah, you know, I don't I don't want to give away too much because there's some stuff that happens in later episodes that there's some characters introduced that are just as crazy as the ones who've already been introduced. I mean, obviously Joe Exotic is batshit crazy. I mean, he's got serious mental health issues. He's a textbook narcissist. He's all those things wrapped up in one. But I think one of the people that I find just fascinating is Cheryl, who is the, animal rights activist who is going after Joe Exotic. And as I think you're starting to see, in the beginning of the series, they introduce her as this kind of Mother Teresa for big cats. And you start thinking, oh, she's a phenomenal person. She's the victim in all this. She's a great, person that I should respect and look up to. And then the series goes on and you learn more and more about her and you realize
she's as bad as anybody else, right? She is as crazy and she's as big a hypocrite as anybody else on that show.
Yeah, and she's also not really, for the animals in some ways. She's kind of has her own motives and it's so layered. It's so complex.
Well, you use the word narcissist. I mean, it is just everybody introduced is some level of narcissist. And what ends up happening is you have no characters that you want to root for other than the tigers. And everybody is freaking nuts. And they're all some sort of level of narcissist and they all hate each other. Which is tremendous story. Like you just have that with the constant shots of like elephants and tigers and lions and just crazy stuff happening. But at the end of the day, you've just got a bunch of narcissists who hate each other's guts, who live in this world that nobody, like I didn't know existed. I knew that, people kept exotic pets. I didn't know they kept them in zoos. Like, and this Joe Exotic guy has a TV channel that like 70 people watch and he's such a narcissist.
Specific type of human being to have big cats as pets, and to have
I have zero pets. I am the opposite.
In their backyard.
I can confidently say I'm the opposite of Joe Exotic. I have zero pets and no desire to have any pets. Like even a fish, I'm just like, this is too much.
I would love to have a dog, but with our lifestyle, I just don't trust that I can be a quality dog owner. So
that's why you have to start a cult. And then, like, bring in, young women to your apartment who could take care of your dog while you're on the road. But that's the obvious learning lesson here.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you start out with this show and you think that it's about crazy zookeepers. And there's all this sex and cults and drugs.
What?
And,
they all have multiple wives and husbands and things like that. Like, of course they do, right? Like, it starts off, like you said, it's just like, all right, yeah, they like tigers. And it's like, okay, well, they also, like, completely don't follow any of the rules of modern society. Like, it's just like, of course they're all, like, polygamists. Of course they're wanting to run for president.
Did you read about this yesterday?
You think who?
Kim Kardashian tweeted about how good this show is. So
really?
You know it's legit. Yeah.
Well, Kim said so. This is.
I think this came out at the perfect time too for them. I think all of America is at home binging this right now.
What have you learned about Florida from this show?
I don't know if I've learned anything because I've been to Florida enough and I know you well enough to know what it's about. I do think that you're from one of the nicer parts of Florida. A lot of this show takes place in Tampa, which I've heard not so positive things about.
Tom Brady's going to Tampa. I mean, he doesn't seem to mind.
There's these people, some of whom have a lot of money, who are still very much white trash in a lot of ways.
And that's Florida.
Like,
that's Florida.
It's like you can still have money and be trashy,
Yeah, I love it. Like you can have enough money to buy braces for you and your entire family and just not.
Right, exactly. Like, a lot of these people have missing teeth, and I'm like, you were just driving a Bentley. Like, how do you have missing teeth? Like, I guess it's where you put your priorities.
this is my state, and I like I texted you, I am weirdly proud that all of this is happening in Florida, where like the opening scene, they have a 40-foot like boa constrictor coming out of and a snow leopard in a van. And I'm like, and I think most people, like, the point of having that as your opening scene is that it delivers a little bit of shock and surprise. And for me, I was like, oh, yeah, that's Homestead. That makes sense.
What makes this documentary really special is that most documentaries, they're retrospectives, right? So they look back on things that have happened.
Right.
But most of this documentary took place when the filmmaker was embedded with them already, so it's all happening in real time with the documentary, and the stuff, the most recent stuff that happened toward the end of the series, the stuff that just played out within months ago, and you know, stuff that's still very active and pertinent right now. And so it's just kind of incredible that this filmmaker stumbled upon this story that ended up giving so many gifts in real time. From a storytelling perspective, it's like a career making proposition.
And you can tell the way that he, like, cause you're right. It starts at sort of the beginning and it kind of unfolds, and you can sort of tell that the way he's telling this story is maybe the way that he sort of started stumbling on these details, right? Where it's like, oh wait, this person might have murdered their husband. Okay, well that's going to be in, like, the third episode. Like that, most like
yeah.
that. And that story could just be an entire documentary by itself, right? Instead,
right.
It starts in episode 3, and so you could sort of tell, like, as these things, as each domino falls, he just sort of stumbles on these things. It's like, oh my god, like, this is a treasure trove. Like he said, he had no idea this would be 5 years of his life, and I think rightly so it is.
I remember talking to Chris Ballard, you know, one time. From Sports Illustrated, one of my favorite writers, and he told me documentary filmmaking is a great thing to study when you're trying to figure out your own story structure in writing and sports writing. And I was watching this documentary just thinking about the decisions the filmmaker made in terms of how they laid it out and the information they presented at certain times. And it was really brilliant. And I think that if you're a writer or any sort of creative person, you can really learn a lot from how they executed this.
Yeah. It's more than just a crazy story. It's a well-done story. Let's end on this. If there was one Warriors player, one person in the Warriors who would own a Tiger, who do you think it would be?
There might be one. I'm trying to think. There aren't too many Warriors that are overly flamboyant in that way. Well, the name that comes to mind is Willie Cauley-Stein, who obviously was traded to Dallas midseason. But I could see Willie Cauley-Stein.
I almost said D'Angelo Russell, another former Warriors. Maybe that's why they got rid of him. They wanted to dodge this before the
D'Angelo Russell, it would just be like his actual pet, and he would just hang out with it and take it to the beach. Willie Cauley-Stein, it would be something that he put in his music videos for the rappers that he works with.
That's right.
And it'd be more of kind of a prop.
I have a feeling we're going to talk about this a lot more next week on La Tuesday, but thanks for jumping on with me, Connor. I know you got more stuff to do. Appreciate the time.
Of course.
That wraps up this edition of Locked On Warriors. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On NBA. Thanks for listening.